Well, hello there, beautiful ones. How are you? I hope you're doing well. Welcome back for another episode of Thoughtful Threads, a fashion philosophy podcast where we have fashion talk for smart folks. That's what we do over here, in case you did not know. I don't really have any church announcements for you all, but once again, I implore you, if you feel moved by the spirit, don't be shy. So go ahead and leave me a five-star review. If the spirit moves you to do that, trust me, I will not stop you. I would super duper appreciate it. And outside of that, that's really much it. That's really all I have. So let's get into the meat and potatoes, because I feel like this is one of those episodes where we're really gonna go there in a lot of ways and touch on some things that are definitely hot takes at the very least, and hotly contested issues, I would definitely say. So, you can probably tell by the title of this particular episode by now, but I'm just gonna say it. We're gonna talk about my complicated beliefs around Phoebe Philo. I'm gonna pause for dramatic effect. We're going there. We're gonna talk about the darling of the industry herself, Miss Phoebe. And if you happen to listen to this platform and fashion is like not really your thing, because I listen to a ton of podcasts that are not in my wheelhouse and like my personal realm of knowledge. So in the event that this is you and this podcast is that for you, let me just give you a brief rundown about Phoebe Philo. So Phoebe Philo is pretty much this untouchable figure in fashion. She was smart enough to kind of bow out at the height of her career, and also just before culture took a turn and we actually started critiquing people who were high up, she bowed out before we really started looking at folks with a critical lens. Because I'm sure if she was who she was in this day and age, she would be way more scrutinized than she was back then. And that wasn't that long ago. She stepped down from her post at Celine in 2017, I believe. So it's not like it's ancient history, but I think that society has changed a lot from pre-COVID to post-COVID. Life is totally different, and how we view public figures is totally different. So she stepped down at a time when criticism was definitely not at its peak, and now that she's back in the limelight, she's being criticized in ways that she may not have imagined, including on this podcast. So, we're a part of it too. But yep, sorry, that was a little baby tangent. So, Phoebe Philo, she's originally from the UK, so she's a UK native. She went to Central Saint Martin, which is a very prestigious school in London for fashion and design. And most notably, I would say the high points of her career are, one, she became the first assistant at Chloé under Stella McCartney, who was the head honcho over there at the time. This is in 1997. And then Stella McCartney, who was Paul McCartney's daughter, for those who don't know, she exited Chloé in 2001, and then Phoebe Philo became the creative director for many years after that, and actually was a pretty pivotal figure in Chloe becoming one of the hottest brands of the early to mid 2000s. This is my hot take, just sidebar. I think that Phoebe Philo at Chloe is way more influential to me than Phoebe Philo at Celine. The numbers say differently. I think Celine is one of the biggest luxury fashion cash cows that we've seen in the last 50 years. But conceptually, stylistically, I think that Chloe is absolutely eating in comparison to Celine. Celine just felt flat to me a lot of the time. Was it really wearable? Yeah, but I just think, in terms of the artistic vision alone, I just think Chloe was a better, Phoebe at Chloe was a better story conceptually than Phoebe at Celine. That is my super hot take. So yeah, Chloé under Phoebe Philo became a commercial success. Before that, it was a pretty sleepy brand. It's not unheard of for a brand to become sleepy through the years, especially after something's been around for decades and decades. Like, I would say in the current day, we're kind of seeing Chanel, for example, be a really sleepy brand after coasting on this commercially successful high for all these years under Karl Lagerfeld, who is no longer with us. And then I would say, like, Paco Rabanne was a super, super sleepy brand, dead in the water up until a couple of years ago. I don't know who's the creative director over there. I can't remember their name right now, but Rabanne, which I think now they've dropped the Paco entirely, but Rabanne is a complete rebrand from what it used to be. And Paco Rabanne is a brand that's been around for a very long time, but they went through a sleepy era where people just didn't care about it. And so that's basically what happened with Chloé, to make a long story short. Phoebe took over the reins after Stella McCartney and catapulted the brand to commercial success. They had some really profitable leather goods, particularly their handbags. The Paddington bag was a super, super commercial success at that time, launched in 2005, and it was definitely an it bag. If you Googled it right now, I'm sure you would see the likes of the Lindsay Lohans and the Nicole Richies and like Misha Bartons and everybody who was somebody in 2005 basically would have had that bag or something reminiscent of it. So that's one of their big hits, thanks to Phoebe. And she left Chloe in 2006. She took a step back from the industry, had a 2-year hiatus, and then she hopped in bed with Celine as the creative director under the LVMH mega umbrella because they own almost everything. And I would say Phoebe at Celine is probably what most of the world recognizes her for. Prior to being at Celine, I believe the brand was being led by one Michael Kors. I don't know if there's some overlap between Kors and Phoebe or if she came right after him, but fun fact, Michael Kors does not just make really horrible monogram handbags that they sell at Macy's. Michael Kors, the designer and the company, is actually pretty highbrow. Fun fact for those who didn't know. But again, Phoebe at Celine absolutely crushed it in the wake of her predecessors. And she just took that company to staggering new heights. She made stakeholders at LVMH very, very happy. I read somewhere that she's responsible for generating somewhere in the ballpark of 900 million euros for LVMH. So, for that reason alone, you got to tip your hat. You got to give credit where credit is due. The numbers do not lie. She is just a commercial superstar. She knows what the women want. And because of her time at Celine over the course of a decade, not only did she make the stakeholders very, very happy, but she made scores of well-to-do women very, very happy too. And they actually have a name now. They call themselves the Philo Files, which is cute in a materialistic sort of way. But if you know anything about Phoebe, or if you don't, she made a lot of money for LVMH and she created a legitimate cult following for her designs. She left Celine after their Fall Winter 2018 collection was presented, and people literally held a vigil for the next collection without Phoebe, which was done by Eddie Slimane. They literally held a vigil in mourning for the fact that she was no longer going to be at Celine. And I will say that Eddie's collection for Celine, the new Celine without the accent over the E, for me, it's a no, just straight up and down. Like, if I had to choose between old Celine and new Celine, I would definitely choose old Celine. But I would say her cult-like following only became more insatiable, more ravenous, more in need of someone to come in and fill that void once everyone saw Eddie Slimane's first collection because it looked like everything else that Eddie Slimane has ever done. No shade. Like, it's heroin chic, maybe not rockabilly, but like, rock star girlfriend, kind of whimsigoth-esque. Like, if you pull up pictures of anything he's ever done, it looks reminiscent of every collection he's ever done at every design house. Like, he is someone that never deviates from the blueprint. I'll say that. Some might say it's lazy. Some might say it's a person who knows what they want, and they have found a formula that works, and they just want to double down on it and refine it. So it depends on how you want to look at it. But for me, I'll just go on the record and say it felt very lazy and uneventful, and was a real letdown to me to see what came in Phoebe Philo's wake. So in the couple of years that Phoebe went on a hiatus, and that she left at the height of her career to spend more time with her family, which maybe not at the time when she did it, which was still in the height of the girl boss era, it felt like a weird decision to make when you're a woman that's at the top of her game. But do I respect it? Do I respect saying I can't get this time back and I need to put my family before my work? I do. I do. Yeah. So that was her decision. And in her wake, there were people who felt like they were in a fashion no man's land because they could not find any other designers that they felt could dress women and account for women's real bodies and real needs for movement and comfort and so on and so forth, like Phoebe did. Phoebe at Celine, for sure, was a very pragmatic designer. I will say that her clothes at Celine had, for the most part, I would say 9 out of 10 pieces were incredibly wearable. And you didn't have to be a size 0 to fit in it or be 5'11" or anything. Like, it could be tailored to fit just a modern working woman. And I understand the mourning of that loss in that kind of woman's closet, because there weren't too many designers at that time who were speaking to that woman. Even today, we still don't have a lot of women who are the creative directors of a lot of these design houses. And I love a lot of work that male designers put out, but, and I want to do an episode about this, or at least kind of expand on this in some way, shape, or form, but a lot of male designers, they design in a very whimsical way. Like, there's not a lot of them that actually want to design for the unsexy day-to-day reality of working women, or just the day-to-day reality of a woman, whether she works or not. A lot of male designers don't design for that kind of thing. And I think in comparison to women designers, we kick women designers' backs in for not making realistic clothing far more than we do with male designers. But again, that is a conversation for another day. But the takeaway here is that after Phoebe went on a hiatus, the pragmatic women had nothing to wear. So you can imagine the absolute joy that these women felt when in 2021, Phoebe Philo confirmed that she was going to come back to fashion in some capacity. And come to find out, she partnered once again with LVMH because they would be foolish not to back her after she made them close to €1 billion. And she's the majority owner of her eponymous brand. So, eponymous, the brand is named after herself. And LVMH is a minority stakeholder in her brand. And they just had, I believe Drop 2 just came out, but Drop number 1 came out in October of this year, 2023. Okay, so that's Phoebe Philo's career, plus some other tidbits that you didn't ask for, in a nutshell. So now let's get into something deeper than her resume. Going back to the original question and the title of this episode, does the world still need Phoebe Philo? The short version of my answer to that is, drum roll please, yes and no. Before you roll your eyes and groan in agony, let me explain, because this is a good one. Let's start with yes. Does the world still need Phoebe Philo? Yes. Let's talk about why. And a spoiler, it's not the reasons that you're probably thinking that I will say. The first thing that stuck out to me about her reemergence into the world of fashion is just how she's running and navigating this new label and how the industry needs to take note and use some of her tips and tricks and put it in the overall fashion industry playbook. It's honestly so refreshing to see her business model, especially in the days and times that we're living in, where it seems like, and this LVMH, her minority stakeholder and parent company, is a huge part of the problem here, but we're in a time where it seems like there's an oversaturation of literally everything, especially in fashion and even in these so-called luxury houses. There's just an oversaturation of the market. Let's start with collections. Right now, a lot of high-end brands are doing an insane amount of collections every year. They have fall winter, they have spring summer, they have resort pre-fall, and then some of them still do haute couture. And it's just entirely too much and is a huge part of the reason why I think a lot of brands start to all blend together and look the same, because they're all designing collections at the speed of light, and so they're all pulling from the same inspirational well, and everything looks derivative of everything else. And beyond the fact that it just zaps any type of creativity that these designers have, it's simply just not good for our resources, our very finite resources, to just be throwing garments into production 5, 6 times a year just to make a couple of fat, bald stakeholders happy. Which is why I love what Phoebe Philo is doing, because at the time of this recording, she is only committing to doing collection drops twice in 1 year. And I absolutely love that she's taking that stance and that she doesn't want to be part of this hamster wheel of creation and consumption, which she did for many years under these other labels. But now that she has her own eponymous brand, she's really setting a tone and doing something differently that I can absolutely respect and that I hope will rub off on a lot of other designers who, for all the creativity that we think a lot of these folks have, a lot of them are reluctant to do something unless they see it work in somebody else's favor first. So if they see, hey, Phoebe Philo at Celine only does two collections a year and it's not stopping anything she's got going on, like it's not messing with her mojo, like her core clientele is going to wait and cash out twice a year. So why do I have to design six collections a year? I don't even like doing six collections a year. I would love to scale down and go to four or two like her. So I think having her lead the way and be that example is going to have a ripple effect in the industry, and it's going to make a lot of designers, old and new, feel more comfortable with not having to participate in this current cadence that we have, where we have these six collections every year, which is just astronomical. Like, for example, I personally believe that there are a handful of brands that actually warrant a resort collection. Very few brands need resort. Chanel is one that comes to mind that, for me personally, at least during the Karl Lagerfeld years, I don't really know so much what goes on with Chanel since he's passed away. I haven't liked what they've done that I've seen. But for me personally, Chanel Resort was always a collection that I looked forward to. That's a brand because it's so massive that they can warrant producing a resort collection. A lot of these smaller brands, Victoria Beckham is one that comes to mind, for example. Like, Victoria Beckham doesn't need resort or pre-fall or any of those other brands, like excuse me, other seasons, off seasons. Like, it doesn't need it. Nice to have, but it's not necessary. And I think seeing Phoebe set an example will have a lot of these brands look at their operations and seriously ask themselves, is this really serving us from a business perspective? Is it really worth it to do all these collections? And I think there's no escaping the reality that the more time you have, the better the outcome is for most artistic endeavors. There are some times where it's just kismet and things just happen to flow effortlessly. Like, I always love to cite the Beyoncé B-Day album as my example. I think that's definitely top three albums of her entire career. And she recorded that album famously in 2 weeks. And literally, when I tell you it's nothing but bangers, sometimes it happens like that, right? Like, sometimes it works. Sometimes all I need is 2 weeks and a dream, and boom, fresh out the kitchen, we have some fire. But oftentimes, when we're designing something from scratch, we need time. We need time for our ideas to ferment. We need time to collect inspiration. We need time to go through different iterations of a garment and go through trial and error and try different cuts and try it in a different fabric and try it in a different color. And we don't get the luxury of that without time. So I love that Phoebe is scaling back and putting her foot down and saying, listen, two collections, I'm taking my time, and I believe that this is worth the wait. And the people who follow her believe that it's worth the wait too. Another thing that I think Phoebe is doing right, which I'm trying to find a way to say this that doesn't sound like a hot take, but I can't think of any other way to put it. So just bear with me and let me explain myself, because straight out of the gate, it kind of sounds crazy, but I'm going to explain. I actually love that Phoebe Philo is just straight up saying with her collection, like, this is not for everybody. And if it's not for you, then that's okay. People are saying that it's too cost prohibitive, it's too expensive. Who wants an $8,500 suede bag? Her runway pieces are largely made out of viscose, which is not a very high quality material, and she's charging thousands on thousands of dollars for it. There's that infamous mum necklace that says mum repeatedly, and it's kind of like a choker style necklace, and it's gold plated sterling silver for, I want to say, $5,000. So, like, very disrespectful prices, basically. And on top of that, she's not doing a very expansive size run on her items either. The size run is pretty narrow, all things considered, and the price points are very cost prohibitive. So everyone's kind of saying, well, what kind of brand is this? This brand is very niche, it's very insular, it doesn't really account for everyone who might potentially be interested in it. And I think Phoebe's deliberate decision to do this with her brand, I respect it. I do. And let me say this. I was informed by the internet recently, in light of her new brand coming up, that she has deliberately made the choice not to hire black models to wear her stuff at Celine. And I'm sure if we never held our feet to the fire for that, there wouldn't be really any people of color in the Phoebe Philo presentation either. But definitely at Celine, she made it a point to say, I don't want to be forced to hire black models. Now, do I think that that's a laugh and a half coming from someone who used to wear gold teeth when she was in design school? Yes, I do. And we can drag her for that at another time, and I probably will. But let me say this. I don't have to like something to respect it. If you don't think that a black woman is a good representation of your brand, I respect your right to feel that way. You will never get a single penny of my African American dollars until they put me in the dirt. Because that's my whole thing, right? Like, I believe to a certain extent in freedoms. You have the freedom to feel how you want to feel about black women wearing your stuff. But that doesn't mean freedom from consequences. And if a consequence is that you've lost me as a customer for the rest of my lifetime, then that's just what it is. And if you can live with that, then I can live with your viewpoints on black women. And maybe it's because I'm a prideful bitch, but what I cannot stand is when I see marginalized people or just people who are for what the subject matter is, they are marginalized people, right? I think as far as luxury, quote unquote, European fashion, I would say women of color are a marginalized group in that space. I can't stand when I see marginalized people begging to be accepted and brought into the fold and noticed. Like, during the whole summer of 2020, I believe it was 2020 or somewhere in the realm of the COVID era, there was that fashionable to be in Vogue or Vogue challenge. There was some kind of challenge where black and brown and queer and whoever else marginalized people were literally creative directing fake covers, and they were putting the Vogue typeface on top of it to look like a fake cover, giving people free creative direction on Beyoncé's internet just to say, hey, look at me, I have the chops to do artistic direction at Vogue. Look what I did. I'm like, you're giving people free intellectual property. For what? Why would you do that? That made me so irritated when that was going around. Because my whole thing is, again, I'm the first to say I'm a prideful bitch. My whole thing is, why do you care if these people acknowledge you? Does it mean that the work is any more valuable just because Condé Nast wants to use it? To the extent that you're willing to give out free intellectual property in the hopes that these people will notice you so that they can hire you, so you can bolster their business, you can help keep their ship afloat. I just don't understand it. And for me, I say all that to say, I think that that's the same energy that permeates with. A lot of the time, maybe not all of the time, but a lot of the time when we get these designers and whoever else, we try to grab their ear and say, oh my God, why don't you want to feature me? You need to feature us. I want to be represented. I don't want to be anywhere where I had to strong arm somebody to let me in. That's how I feel. If I'm only here because somebody put a gun to your head and said, let them in, you don't really want me here. And that's fine. I will take my black derriere somewhere where I am celebrated and not tolerated. So for me, and this is probably, a very individualized and nuanced take, but I like that Phoebe is pretty much saying sorry, not sorry in the way she conducts her business and the way she's casted her models and the way she's done her ads and whatever else. Even though, again, it's a laugh and a half that you were literally walking around with gold teeth in your mouth and long red acrylic nails, but you don't like black girls. Okay, girl. But I digress. My point is, I respect somebody telling me exactly where I stand and saying, hey, I didn't design this with you in mind. So I can say, well, I'm glad that we cleared that up. I will go take my African American dollars somewhere else. Because I respect that more than what. I think probably a lot more brands than we realize are doing, which is they make sure that every communication that goes out goes through four or five different PR people before it's allowed to go into print. So we don't actually ever really know what these designers and what these brands' beliefs are. And so for all we know, we're buying up a bunch of new Bottega, and there was that rumor, I guess, that Daniel Lee was saying a bunch of racially insensitive things in a heated meeting with Bernard Arnault or somebody. I don't know. And excuse me, but Bottega's at Kering, I think. So I don't think it's Bernard Arnault. It's someone else that I can't think of right now. But my point is, I would rather know upfront how you feel rather than hiding behind this squeaky clean image and taking my money. Meanwhile, you actually despise me. And this take is specific to Phoebe Philo, but to open it up to a more general viewpoint, what I do like about what she's doing is that she's focusing on a core following of people, which I think we see far too little of right now in the industry. It feels like everybody's trying to be something for everyone. And it's just like how they say, when you're a friend to everyone, you're a friend to no one. When you're a brand to everyone, you're a brand to no one. And because of really capitalism and this desire to please shareholders and all of the other things that ruin perfectly good businesses. The idea is to scale, scale, scale. And to scale, you have to expand and you have to envelop as many people with money to burn as you possibly can. And as a result, what you have becomes diluted and it becomes bastardized and it's a shell of its former self, all for the sake of the dollar. And nothing really feels like community anymore. Like the Anne de Meulemeester community is a true community. Like people who appreciate de Meulemeester, they see each other. They really have a sense of a bond between them because a certain kind of person likes that brand. Or like I think about early 2000s Jill Sander. That was a certain kind of person. That brand spoke to a very specific kind of woman. And there was camaraderie in that. There was community in that. And I'm actually pleasantly surprised to see that Phoebe hasn't tried to stray away from that cult-like following that she built at Celine. I think if anything, she's dog whistling specifically to them and only them, which is incredibly smart. And I think it will set an intention in the industry that a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? It's better to focus on the clients who know and love and respect the brand, who cherish the items, who won't be fair weather clients, who won't just pop in when there's a viral TikTok bag of the season and then send all that stuff over to Fashion File and rebag 6 months later when they're done with it. Like she's not trying to dog whistle to just any and everyone for a quick buck. She's really saying, hey, if you were rocking with what I was doing before, I am making this with you in mind. And I think that that's awesome. And I hope that that sets the tone for other brands going forward. Because, and this again might be an unpopular opinion, I really truly believe in my heart of hearts that we do not have to be everything to everybody. It is okay to have a niche. It is okay to have a specific subset of people that rock with what you're doing. I don't think there's anything wrong with segmented groups. They were perfectly fine up until the advent of social media, to be honest. And there are so many people now who have an interest in being part of this larger community. And there's just this mass appeal to fashion that never existed before. And I think Phoebe's one of the first people in a long time that I'm seeing actually go against it and say, no, I don't want to be everything to everyone. I want to be everything to someone. So those are the reasons why I do think that the world still needs Phoebe Philo. And now I want to talk about the reasons why I think that we don't need her anymore. To be honest with you, I think that in her absence, she let a lot of people gain up on her, and now I feel like there are so many contenders for what she's doing that it really begs the question, unless again you're a diehard follower, what is the point of Phoebe Philo's label? Of course, we have The Row, which has been a contender with Celine for quite a while now, but I think definitely they have forged a name for themselves in Phoebe Philo's absence that they're pretty much kind of the top dog of that clothing genre now. That timeless, nondescript, no label, highest quality materials that I can get my hands on, kind of almost androgynous design style. Like they've really cornered that market. They've taken over in her absence, and she did it to herself. Outside of them, I think, even though they don't put enough respect on her name, I think Victoria Beckham's label is another one as well. I think if it wasn't named after Victoria Beckham, that line would be way more commercially successful. But if we remove the founder from the actual clothing, the clothing is right in line with what a lover of old Celine would have been wearing. And the label is still doing its thing. So there's The Row, there's Victoria Beckham, and now we have some newcomers on the scene like Kate. I think Kate is a really big contemporary contender for what Phoebe Philo's trying to do. Now, I think Kate could stand to come down a little bit with her prices. I think it is a little pricey just to be this very contemporary brand that really only kind of got hot in 2020-ish. I've heard about it since 2017, but the fact is that they really kind of blew up when Katie Holmes wore that two-piece in 2020 or 2021, one of those. So, long story short, we have Kate. We have just even the mimicking on the high street and in fast fashion, right? We have H&M, we have COS, which is owned by H&M, for those who didn't know. We have Zara, we have now the new iteration of Banana Republic. I'm loving the new Banana Republic, by the way. We have Zara, the Mangoes. Like, we have so many people that are doing that. Ugh, God, I hate saying this, but the quiet luxury aesthetic, that it really begs the question of why do we need another quiet luxury brand at this time? And for me, I'm of the personal belief that if the only point of differentiation between you and everyone else is just that you have a recognizable name, then that means that your items and your product and your designs on their own have no merit and they're not good. Because if it was genuinely good, I could put anybody's name on this label and it wouldn't matter. We'd all appreciate the design for what it is. But I feel like if we didn't know it was Phoebe's brand, we would all just kind of shrug and be like, I mean, yeah, it's a cool suede bag. Yeah, it's a cool pea coat or sweater or whatever. Like, yeah, I just think that we would all just kind of shrug and be like, yeah, it's cool. How much is it? $8,500? Okay, it's not that cool. Like, I think that if we didn't know it was Phoebe's work, I think that's what the general consensus would be. And I feel like for the years that she was gone, there was so much hype around her, which is not her fault. I don't think Phoebe deliberately did anything to contribute to the hype. It was honestly people just kind of ODing and maxing it out and creating all these old Celine Instagram pages and Philophile Instagram pages and all this other nonsense. And they collectively hyped her up to be this like fashion deity that I don't think she was ever going to live up to that hype when she came back, but I think especially for her to come back in the wake of so many other brands that have taken that design ethos and ran with it at every price point, I think it just makes it a really underwhelming welcome back. And again, I just find myself asking when I go through the collection, like, other than a diehard cult follower, who is this honestly for? Because it doesn't really feel like it's for anyone. And I will also say another thing that I feel like Phoebe is doing wrong is underestimating the nonchalance of everyone that's existed throughout all these years without her at this point. I think that I assume the idea here is to make some money. Again, I don't think at this point that Phoebe is interested in scaling, which I love. I don't think every business needs to scale massively to be a success. But I think just based on how honestly lazy everything feels to me, that it feels to me like she's coasting off of past achievements. And I think that that is anyone's downfall, not just Phoebe's. But I think it will be Phoebe's downfall if she believes that what she's done in the past is going to be enough to bolster her in the present. I think folks who are in the industry and around the industry will always have respect for what she was able to achieve because that's not easy to do. Regardless of however I feel about her, as I said in the beginning, you know, facts are facts. She made people a lot of money. She was a commercial success. She took brands back out of obscurity and then brought them back into the limelight. So I respect that it takes a level of talent to make that happen. But I get the feeling that she feels like what she's done will simply speak for itself in the present. And I just don't think that we're in a day and age where past achievements really matter like that anymore. I think that we are in the what have you done for me lately era of everything, including business. And thinking that you're going to be able to coast off of legacy is just not going to work. Like, for example, at the time that I'm recording this, there's nothing on the Phoebe Philo Instagram page. I think that's crazy. And I think that's crazy as someone who, like, my ultimate goal in life is to create something that is self-sustaining, that I can delete all of my personal stuff and just let that thing run and self-sustain. And even I think that what she's doing by not promoting on Instagram is crazy. Because even the Row doesn't post super hard sell, like shop now for this new bag and blah, blah, blah. Like the Row doesn't do that. They really kind of post really more inspiration and inspo pics than anything. But the point is, they have something there to anchor people. Phoebe has nothing. And I think having nothing on your Instagram when you have just launched your first collection is really bad PR. And just because you've accomplished some amazing things in your life, like, don't ever be too cool to care. I firmly believe that. Don't ever be too cool to care, because someone who is cool enough to care will come in and swoop down and take that crowd from you real quick. And I'm sure there's somebody out there who's probably a philophile and listening to this. And hey, glad to have you. And you might be rolling your eyes and thinking to yourself, like, oh, well, almost all the stuff on the website is sold out. That is true. But I will bet all the money in my wallet right now that the Phoebe Philo drop is in very, very limited quantities. So I'm not saying it didn't sell out. But if you sold out and you only produced 50 units, then I mean, take that with a grain of salt. You sold 50 items, which for someone who was a mega name for years, yeah, I think you can sell $55,000 items. Yeah, I think you can do that all day long. Now, could you create an order for Saks and Neiman's and Bergdorf's and Harrods? And do that thousands of times over, I'm gonna say that I have my doubts. But overall, I will say I have a complicated and nuanced take on Phoebe Philo, as you just heard me talk about nonstop over the last 40 something minutes. But I will say ultimately, I am happy to see someone in the fashion space right now who actually is a true lover and master of the craft, and who is not working in fashion as a proxy for something else. They're working in fashion because they actually care about the clothes and the shoes and the bags, and they care about dressing women and just things that once felt like a given years ago. But again, I do blame LVMH largely for what fashion is now. A lot of the time, it just feels like it's a cash grab for people, that they're not really in it for the love of the craft, that they see dollar signs, and LVMH is giving them many dollar signs, and it just dilutes the whole entire process of creating. And I like that Phoebe is back in action, because it feels like a nod to a bygone era of people who were more workhorse than show pony. I miss that. I think it's okay to have a little bit of both, because variety is the spice of life, but I feel like we've veered all the way in the direction of the show pony, and we need to get back more to the workhorses, because fashion needs them. And on that note, I feel like we've covered all our bases here. Let me know if anything I said resonated with you, if you agree, if you don't agree, if you're somewhere in the middle. There's a lot of gray area in this particular conversation, I will say. And as there should be, because people are complex, right? I don't believe that people exist in a vacuum and that they're all good or all bad. I think a lot of things exist in this gray area, and it's not a simple conversation. And I'd love to expand on it with you. So you guys know where to find me. I'm on TikTok and Instagram and also email, and I'm here. I would love to have a deeper conversation about this and what this means for the fashion industry at large. So, can't wait to hear from you. And thank you once again for tuning in to another episode of Thoughtful Threads. If you like this episode or any of the others, please feel free once again to leave me a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. I am eternally grateful. Thanks so much for coming back. Bye.